Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, President Donald Trump's bogus Voter Integrity Commission has suspended its collection of states' voter information until a judge rules on whether it is a violation of privacy laws. Also, the commission is facing two new lawsuits, one from the Lawyers Committee, also the other from the ACLU. We will talk with the staff attorney of the ACLU next. The New York Times reports that Donald Trump Jr. was told in an email that the Russian government wanted to aid Trump's election campaign during the 2016 presidential race. Well, now, they're changing their story again. Shocking. A lawsuit accuses activist DeRay McKesson and Black Lives Matter of inciting violence in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Meanwhile, Black Lives Matter claps back with their answer to the NRA's recent video. We'll talk with one of the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement. Also, the 2018 midterm elections are just around the corner. The National Bar Association is wasting no time. This week, they are relaunching their political action committee to raise money for candidates and incumbents who support issues important to the Black community. We'll talk to the incoming president of the National Bar Association. Also, home ownership in America is on the rebound, but not for Black folks. The president of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers will break down a new report that finds the gap between Black and white home ownership is now the largest it has been in 70 years. Plus, part three of my conversation with the queen of Creole cuisine, Leah Chase. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. The greatest threat to democracy and elections in America is not Russia and Putin. It is the Republican Party. All across this country, we have seen Republicans in state after state after state after state after state engage in massive voter suppression. The latest is Donald Trump's Voter Integrity Commission, which is supposed to be looking to allege voter fraud, but it pretty much is the biggest joke in the country. Well, you can throw in Donald Trump Jr. Now, they have stopped their controversial effort to access voter information from all 50 states until a judge rules on whether the panel is abiding by federal privacy laws. The suspension comes amid a lawsuit filed last week by a privacy group who is seeking a temporary restraining order to block the commission from gathering voter information, including birth dates, partial social security numbers, and voting history. Yesterday, two more lawsuits were filed against the commission. Both the ACLU and the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law charged the commission with operating in secrecy, thus violating the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which requires advisory groups to hold public meetings and provide written records to the public. Since Donald Trump appointed Chris Kobach, the vice chair of the commission, began requesting information last month, more than 48 states have refused to comply. Arkansas is providing some information, so is Florida. Kobach says he wants to compare the information with federal databases to uncover voter fraud, but opponents say it is the latest Republican effort to purge voters from the rolls. Joining us by phone from D.C. is Sophia Lynn Lakin, staff attorney for the Voting Rights Project at the ACLU. Sophia, first and foremost, I open up that way by saying that Republicans are a threat to democracy in these elections, because we see effort after effort. Were it not for the courts in this country, we will continue to see massive voter suppression by the Republican Party. This commission is the latest.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for having me on the show today. I certainly agree that the Election Integrity or so-called Election Integrity Commission is essentially a cover to justify some of the voter suppression tactics that we've seen across the nation in the last couple of years. And obviously, it's had a long history of being a problem in our country, unfortunately, keeping me busy at work. And It's truly nerve-wracking and problematic, and certainly we see a lot of voters very nervous about the government, in particular this commission collecting their data.
In fact, Sophia, in Colorado, we are seeing an explosion in the number of people who literally are unregistering because they are afraid that Colorado is going to be sharing their information with this advisory group.
I was just thinking about that, and you know what's concerning about that is I believe that it's maybe by encouraging voters to deregister actually achieving the purpose that the Election Integrity Commission is trying to achieve in the long run.
Well, first of all, that is exactly what is going on here, and when you look at these threats by Kris Kobach, you look at what they have done. They've been utterly shameful, and it continues. And what still is stunning, here's a guy who is vice chair who wants states to release the information, yet he refuses to release the very information he is seeking in his own state of Kansas.
That's right. I would say, you know, Secretary Kobach has this long history of trying to make it very difficult for people to register to vote in his own home state of Kansas. He's been peddling his own Show Me Your Papers law, this documentary proof of citizenship requirements, which we have challenged and so far have been prevailing in the federal courts there. And what we're asking in this lawsuit is, show us your papers. We really need to have what they're doing scrutinized, evaluated. The public under the Federal Advisory Committee Act has a right to know exactly what they're doing, what they're planning on doing with this data, how they're planning on using it, because let's just say the individuals who are on this commission do not have the best record when it comes to protecting this democracy and the fundamental right to vote.
And also what we now have is Donald Trump. He has named two more folks to this particular commission, one of them a conservative columnist, one of them a Republican who worked in George W. Bush's Department of Justice, who frankly has been targeting largely black, according to this report in Mother Jones, largely black towns and cities in Mississippi, people who can't afford to fight them, telling them to purge folks from their roles. That guy is Christian Adams of Virginia.
That's right, J. Christian Adams, along with Hans von Spakovsky, along with Kris Kobach, Ken Blackwell, all of these individuals have really made wild exaggerations about election irregularities, as well as in some cases participated very actively in suppressing the right to vote. So this all goes to show how important it is for there to be transparency and public oversight on what this commission is doing. So, you know, let's keep the pressure on.
Okay.
Talk to your secretaries of state if they're thinking about providing data, making sure that the data is secure. I think one of the items that is concerning to us as well is this is honey to a bee. If you put all this data in one place, if we're worried about the Russian hacking a system,
right,
putting all these voter information data in one location is really alarming. So we want to make sure that what they're doing is, like I said, done under the light of day.
Got it.
And if their data is collected, it needs to be secure, and only publicly available data should be out there at all.
Sophia Lakin with the ACLU, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. Let's go to our panel here. Avis Jones DeWeaver, of course, leadership strategist, author of How Exceptional Black Women Lead, Brandon Cooper, chairman of the Prince George's Republican Party, as well as Angela Peoples, co-director of Get Equal. Brandon, again, this is your party. Mm-hmm. And what Kris Kobach and this commission is doing is fundamentally shameful. 48 states have said, no, we're not turning over anything to you.
Yeah, and I agree. And as you know, we're not clones, so there's times when I can disagree with my party. I disagree with this commission, probably for different reasons than you, but I agree with kind of what your
So why you disagree with it?
As you said earlier, as the lawsuit states, some of the procedural aspects of it, the fact that there's a national database, the Constitution only gives the federal government one role in elections, that's to set the date. All the other functions of our elections are responsible by the states. And I don't like the idea of the federal government coming in and grabbing it and taking over that power. So some of the same issues in the lawsuit are the reason that I oppose it. When you go to now expanding it, talking about, you know, voter suppression, there's been instances of that. We talked about it, and I agree with you. North Carolina, a prime example you like to talk about. There's other examples as well. But the idea of cleaning the rolls, that is by itself is not an act of voter suppression. We can look at examples in Virginia this earlier this year. 21-year-old Andrew Spile, I think his name was, convicted 4 months to jail for fake registration, over 24 of them in Virginia. There's examples of courts in Pennsylvania overturning the results of an election based on fraudulent voter activity. This is all within the last 10 to 15 years, hundreds of examples of it.
First of all, if I recall when in Pennsylvania in 2012 in Pennsylvania, when they actually passed their voter ID law, mm-hmm. The head of the Republican Party there said this is going to guarantee Mitt Romney's win, beating then President Barack Obama. And then when they actually got sued, they went to federal court to file documents. State of Pennsylvania filed documents, the Attorney General's office mm-hmm. saying they had no evidence of voter fraud. The state attorney general, you just said in the last 10 to 15 years.
There's hundreds of examples.
Hold up, I'm sorry. Yep. But the state attorney general, who's a Republican, filed documents with the federal court saying they had no evidence of voter fraud.
Okay, I understand that. But also the Supreme Court, when they issued the decision supporting voter ID, saying that it's not unconstitutional, they cited in their opinion that there is definitely examples going back to the founding of our country of it happening.
And what I'm saying is, when you have individuals who want to pass off this nonsense, oh, there's massive voter fraud, they are flat out liars.
Well, I agree.
And what I'm saying is,
massive.
This is a clear strategy, Avis, by the Republican Party in state after state after state.
Absolutely, it's a clear strategy. I mean, and look at what exactly was the impetus for this commission in the first place. You had this person lie to the American people, this person who's inhabiting 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, lie to the American people and say that the only reason why he lost the election by 3 million in terms of the popular vote was because it was this massive voter fraud where millions of people voted.
3 to 5 million.
Exactly. Complete
lie.
And utter lie. So the whole foundation, the whole motivation for this is a lie. The only reason why they're doing this is to try to push people off the roll so they can steal another election.
Shelly, go to my iPad. This is an article that's in Mother Jones, motherjones.com right now. These three lawyers are quietly purging voter rolls across the country. One of them, Angela, is Christian Adams, who Trump just appointed to this commission. And this individual here is literally targeting small towns in Mississippi, threatening them with lawsuits, taking them to court. They can't afford it. One town, 70% black, paid a lawyer about $1,000, wasn't good at all, and they literally said, we don't even have the money to even fight this, and they are specifically targeting small towns with largely black populations.
Which is exactly why Brandon's point about purging voter rolls in and of itself is not, you know, voter suppression. When you're targeting specific communities like the black community in the South, that is very much voter suppression. But I think what's something I appreciate this lawsuit by the ACLU and other efforts, and I really appreciate these states that are pushing back on sharing this information. But whether it's legal precedent or political sort of social norm precedent, this president, this administration, and now the Republican Party has thrown all rules out the window. And so I think that it's time for other leaders, whether it's Democrats or across the political spectrum, to take the gloves off as well. If they are going to fight outside of the rules, if they're going to fight outside of the norms that have informed our politics and brought our country to be the way that it is, then we should also fight outside of those norms too. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of that from our leaders.
Let's talk about this here, folks. So, of course, Donald Trump Jr. in some hot water before arranging a meeting with a Kremlin-connected Russian lawyer that he believed would offer him compromising information about Hillary Clinton. Trump Jr. was informed in an email that it was indeed a meeting from the Russian government, citing multiple sources with knowledge of the email. The New York Times reported that Rob Goldstone, who connected Trump Jr. with the Russian lawyer, sent the email pointing to the Russian government as the source of potential information that could damage Clinton. The story that Trump Jr. was offered potential information from the Russian government to aid his father's campaign came after months of staunch denials from President Donald Trump that his campaign had a connection to Russia. Now, his was also interesting. Trump Jr. initially said, oh my God, it is disgusting they're saying these things. But then Saturday he changed his story to say that, oh, the meeting was about adoption. Well, then after one story, he then came back on Sunday and said, ah, the meeting was about information about Clinton. Now all of a sudden, it's a new story. Now we have this email. Well, his lawyer said in a statement following the story, very much ado about nothing. The Times said it was not clear if Goldstone knew where the potential information was coming from, and one person the report cited said it appeared Goldstone was sending information that had come through several other people. Now, there's no evidence to suggest that the promised damaging information was related to Russian government computer hacking and led to the release of thousands of Democratic National Committee emails. And the meeting took place less than a week before it was widely reported that Russian hackers had infiltrated the committee's servers. Okay, so how interesting,
yeah.
How convenient that you get an email, Brandon, that says, I have info from the Russian government. Hey, let's meet. Why would a campaign meet with a foreign adversary to affect our presidential election?
Again, a lot of things the Trump campaign administration has done, I don't can't have an answer for. So to your question, I have no idea why you meet with this meeting.
You know why they met with him?
No. Well, let me finish. Can I finish? Hold up.
Who's that? That have helped certainly the Trump associates in his campaign. They see the Russians as people that have given them lots of money, lots of resources, lots of access.
I'm sorry.
Money.
Donald Trump Jr.
Yes.
Said out of his own mouth, we have millions flowing into the Trump organization from Russia. Eric Trump,
yes,
in an interview with a Golf World magazine writer, said we have lots of money coming in from Russian interests. Now, Donald Trump says, oh no, I have no connections, no money. Yet his own sons, a decade before he decided to run, own up to millions flowing in from Russia. You said, where's the evidence? It came from the mouths of his two sons.
A decade ago, according to a reporter. But what I was saying again,
not according to a reporter.
It is going to
be. It was a quote from Donald Trump Jr.
A decade ago, yes. Again, so we're pushing the point, going back to the original story. Again, this Russia investigation that's been going on for over a year. Over six different agencies in D.C. are investigating.
I'm sorry, stop. First of all, there are multiple investigations going on.
There's over six of them, as I said.
Okay, gotcha. Go ahead.
So at least one of them has been starting since last June of last year.
Go ahead.
That's a fact. I'm waiting for the evidence to come out. If there's evidence, I told you in the green room, I'm 100% for impeachment, getting rid of them, with all that stuff. There's investigations going on. You're talking about changing of stories. A lot of people in this investigation. Let me finish. There's been a lot of people who changed their story during this election, including Claire McCaskill, who's a Democrat senator.
The boy changed his response from Saturday to Sunday.
Like Nina Turner.
It didn't even last 24 hours. Go ahead.
I love this Russia story.
Go ahead.
I'm a Democrat, Nina Turner of Ohio.
And I already know the answer, but I'm just going to ask you.
Answer the question.
What is this? What is enough evidence? An email isn't enough.
What I'm saying is this. The FBI is investigating it. When they have the evidence and they can bring charges or anything of that nature.
Angela Davis.
If you're saying the FBI information, Donald Trump, all of the agencies, the intelligence agencies have said Russia is responsible for this. That's the evidence. What does your president say? Maybe it was the Russians, or maybe it was China.
I'm saying that's stupid.
Go ahead.
It's clear. An investigation is ongoing. So clearly, they're not going to release what they're doing as they are undergoing the investigation. So this argument that I want to see the evidence is a farce. It is a farce argument because everyone who is saying that knows how investigations run, particularly if you're an attorney.
So there won't be any evidence that's enough for people like
Tick.
That's all, not all, 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 against
All I'm saying right here, all I'm saying right here, y'all.
Are you gonna be charges or what?
All I'm saying is, Donald Trump Jr., you are the weakest link. And you are about to straight get busted. I'm just saying. So Brandon, you can spin.
I'm waiting for it.
Brandon,
I'm
you can spin all day with.
I'm here for it. I'm here for
it. The stores are changing.
No.
Clay McCasco.
All I'm saying,
y'all,
is,
the boy changed his story.
And that's
from
wrong.
From Saturday to Sunday to Monday. Well, what is it going to be today on Tuesday? We come back. A lawsuit accuses activist Deray McCutcheon and Black Lives Matter of inciting violence in Baton Rouge. Also, Black Lives Matter claps back at the National Rifle Association when it comes to their shameful video. All of that next. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, Baton Rouge, Louisiana police officers accusing or suing activist Deray McCutcheon and four other Black Lives Matter leaders, accusing the group of inciting violence last year. The police officer behind the lawsuit was wounded during a shooting rampage and left three officers dead in July 2016. The officer says someone with Black Lives Matter shot him during the protests against the police shootings of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile. But the black gunman, Gavin Long, identified himself as a member of the mostly white sovereign citizen movement, which is an anti-government group. Now, in 2016, McCutcheon and two other activists sued the Baton Rouge Police Department over the arrest of nearly 200 demonstrators during mostly peaceful protests over police killings. McCutcheon also was arrested. Now, he's not commented on this lawsuit. Black Lives Matter leaders say their movement does not promote violence against cops. The police officer is seeking $75,000 in damage. Now, Black Lives Matter has clapped back at the National Rifle Association's shameful video of blasting them for exercising their First Amendment rights. Here it is.
They use their guns to assassinate black people. They use their schools to funnel black students through a school-to-prison pipeline. They use their state institutions, bought politicians, business conglomerates, and white supremacist domestic terrorists to incite violence over and over again. And then they use their new president to enact a law and order administration, all to make them shoot first, to make them ask questions later, make them scream, "I thought he had a gun in his hand," and "I feared for my life," and "he matched the description of a suspect," and "she was threatening us." To shoot and kill Philando Castile, Charlena Lyles, Keisha Michael, Keith Bercy, and Waukesha Wilson. Until the only option left is for black people to disrupt the systems that keep us oppressed and build the kinds of communities in which we want to live. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse to kill more of us. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our communities and our struggle for freedom, is to fight this violence with the raised, clenched black fist of resistance. We are Black Lives Matter, and we are freedom's future place. Wait, hold up. What's with the aggressive fear-mongering video tactics? Someone cut the music and bring up the lights. Better. We're talking about our lives here. When the NRA issues a public call to their constituents inciting violence against people who are constitutionally fighting for their lives, we don't take that lightly. We know that we are not safe, but we are not scared either. We will continue to produce media, teach students, march, and protest to not only protect the First Amendment as fiercely as the NRA protects the Second, but to protect our lives from gun-toting racists. We demand the NRA immediately remove their dangerous propaganda videos narrated by conservative talk radio hosts Dana Lash and Grant Stinchfield.
All right, folks, the Black Lives Matter chapter there in L.A., they've asked the NRA ad to be removed from their website as well as social media outlets. Of course, they have refused to do so. The NRA also has put out another video directly naming Tamika Mallory of the Black Lives Matter movement. That ad still remains on their website, and Tamika and others will be leading a protest march tomorrow targeting the National Rifle Association, excuse me, on Thursday, targeting the NRA. Tamika will be on News 1 Now tomorrow. Joining us from L.A. Is Patrice Cullors, one of the co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement. Patrice, it's very interesting that the NRA tries to say, oh, no, this was about the truth in America. It was a clear attack on black folks using their First Amendment rights.
Exactly. Exactly. And the moment I saw that ad, and there's been many other ads that the NRA TV has put out since with Sheriff Clark, stating that Black Lives Matter is a hate group, and totally spinning the conversation, which is actually NRA is putting out, NRA TV in particular, is putting out hateful propaganda that targets Black Lives Matter in particular, targets people who are in the current resistance against this administration, and it's dangerous. And we want them to stop, and we want them to stop now.
And what people don't understand when you talk about, you know, the NRA, they love the Second Amendment, but they can't stand the First Amendment. and what they really don't like, they don't like the fact that you have black folks standing up for themselves, and they have yet to answer the question, why have they been so silent on the death of Philando Castile, who had a permit to carry? Why have they been so silent on the brother who was killed in Ohio at the Walmart there in Beaver Creek? It is escaping me right now, but I have his name for a second.
John Crawford.
But they're just quiet. They're just quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is holes in their argument around who is allowed to own guns, who's allowed to be proud gun owners. And we're seeing everything about the NRA in particular, you know, fall to the wayside. And I think it's important that viewers understand that Black Lives Matter in particular have been under assault by law enforcement, by the NRA for a long time. But I think what we're now saying is you can't keep bullying us. And it's, yes, you know, there's a line in the ad that says we are, we know we're not safe, but we're not scared either. And that's important. It's unfortunate that we live in an America in 2017 where Black people still feel completely unsafe, and that the NRA is actually feeding their base fear-mongering tactics. And the sacrifice of that is always Black folks.
Well, and also I think what's important here is the pushback, because frankly, Democrats and Republicans are scared to death of the NRA. The amount of money they drop in races, politicians don't want to oppose them, and regular citizens have to make it perfectly clear to NRA members that no one is scared of you, nobody's scared of your guns, of your bullets, and of your bullying tactics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the NRA has failed the American public time and time again. They never come out to speak out against white terrorism, right? They never speak out against some of the most heinous hate crimes that have happened across this country when it comes to gun violence. And instead, they use their platform to degrade and really humiliate a movement that has been about fighting for not the lives of Black people and therefore the lives of the American people. And I think it's a powerful message when the NRA, instead of apologizing, decides to buckle down and say, we won't apologize to you. Instead, we're going to create more propaganda. That's a dangerous line to toe. And I think we need to hear elected officials stand up. I think you're completely right. It shouldn't just be civilians, right? It should be elected officials saying, this is unacceptable behavior. And we need you to take down racist propaganda and violent propaganda. And we also need you, NRA, to stand up for everybody's civil rights.
Patrice Cullors, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we come back on News One Now. We'll talk with the National Bar Association about what they are doing to focus on the 2018 midterm elections. Also, Black home ownership has taken a major beating during the recession. 53% of all Black wealth wiped out, and we still are not recovering well. We'll break that down as well. This is News One Now on TV One.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
A $142 million settlement will help Wells Fargo customers get their money back after employees used their names to create fake accounts. A federal judge in San Francisco has given preliminary approval for Wells Fargo's proposed settlement. This is part of a class action settlement involving claims regarding consumer and small business bank accounts, credit cards, or loans over the past 15 years. Customers would be compensated for the fees they were charged based on the number of unauthorized accounts. CEO Tim Sloan is promising to help all customers get their money back.
What we're saying to our customers, if they have a concern about their account, they should come in and see us.
Wells Fargo still faces probes from federal and state regulators, as well as several private lawsuits. The family of a black man wrongly confronted by bounty hunters wants charges filed. Cell phone video shows the chaotic confrontation on July 4th in Humble, Texas, just outside of Houston. Bounty hunters snatched 22-year-old Kimo Fail out of his car and cuffed him. His wife and her family ran outside to stop them. The bounty hunters punched her father and pepper sprayed her mother. Wow. They then shoved Fail in the back of a truck and hit him with their batons.
Comes towards me, gun drawn already. He's telling me, get out the car. I'm like, excuse me, sir. I'm like, can I help you? I was like, what's the problem? He told the other guy to follow me. Okay. When I asked the constable, I was like, excuse me, sir, where were they taking me if I had no warrants? The constable said, that's a good question. Where were they going to take you?
According to Precinct 4 investigators, the bounty hunters were after Fail for missing court months ago. But his case has been closed since May. Prosecutors have declined to file charges for the moment. In May, seven bounty hunters were charged with first-degree murder after killing 24-year-old Jalen Johnson in April. Johnson was unarmed, and the bounty hunters actually had the wrong guy. All right, folks, the former security guard is suing the NBA Atlanta Hawks and Phillips Arena, accusing them of firing him because of his race. In his lawsuit, Samuel Hayes III says security treated VIP guests differently based on their race. For example, Future and Drake had to go through metal detectors. But white artists AC/DC and Bon Jovi were allowed to bypass security. One of his claims mentions Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed. Hayes says Mayor Reed's security detail requested to bypass security to attend the concert. But Hayes' supervisor refused to do so, even though he has granted the same request for white entertainers and celebrities. But there's a snag in Hayes' lawsuit. Mayor Reed is denying the request ever happened. A statement from his spokesperson says Mayor Reed has never requested special privileges or treatment at Phillips Arena. Accordingly, the claims concerning Mayor Reed made in this lawsuit are totally and completely false. Hayes says in the lawsuit he was fired as retaliation, but the Atlanta Hawks at Phillips Arena says he was fired for, quote, poor performance. All right, folks, next year is the midterm elections. And of course, we can't wait too late to get involved. The National Bar Association, of course, the group of black lawyers and judges, they will relaunch their political action committee this week in time for the 2018 midterms. The PAC will raise money for candidates and incumbents who support issues important to African Americans, including health care, criminal justice reform, and voting rights, which are being dismantled as a result of the 2016 presidential election. The NBA will kick off its national fundraising efforts tonight at an event in D.C. Joining us right now is the incoming 75th president of the NBA, Juan Thomas. Juan, first of all, how long has the Political Action Committee been dead or dormant?
For about 10 years.
Why?
Well, the NBA has been going through a transition. We've had...
For a decade?
Well, we are on our feet, strong and ready to move the NBA PAC forward.
See, this is one of the issues that bothers me. I had Bob Johnson on the show after the election. We were talking about African Americans and need to be able to control our own destiny. Mm-hmm. And just for folks to know, I did call his people again to say, yo, when are we going to have this meeting to talk about African Americans creating their own fund to drive black voter get out? I'm waiting to hear back from him on that. So I would advise, and I'm going to keep calling him every month till this meeting actually happens. But at the end of the day, this is what I've always said. We have to be able to own our own politics.
That's right.
And if we're not raising money and we're dependent upon others, then we're not controlling our politics.
That's right. And I totally agree with you. And that's why, as you may remember, a gentleman out of Chicago named Emil Jones taught me that you need to prepare for war in times of peace. Now, we're hardly in a time of peace right now, but the National Bar Association is committed to raising the resources necessary to help candidates who support our legislative and policy agenda. And so we're working very diligently between now and the 2018 midterm elections to do just that. And so tonight, as you mentioned, we're having a launch event. A regular panelist on your show, A. Scott Bolden, has agreed to chair the PAC this year under my administration. So he and I are working collaboratively together with lawyers from across the country to truly make an impact, to find candidates, particularly candidates not only who support our agenda, but who historically don't get the support from the traditional party leaders in the Democrat and the Republican Party. So sisters like Stacey Abrams in Georgia running for governor, Pam Keith running for Congress down in Florida, Andrew Gillum running for Florida governor, here in the Virginia area, Justin Fairfax, mm-hmm. Running for lieutenant governor. These are the kind of people that we want to support moving forward in 2018 and 2020 as we get to the census.
I have a question. You talked about how you're going to be supporting candidates that support your agenda and your policies. Does the NBA have any pieces on its agenda that are specifically speaking to police violence and how those cases are treated through the court system?
Yes, absolutely. We have a very progressive legislative agenda. Part of my administration platform and one of my initiatives is doing work on the state level. A lot of these issues are state policy issues.
Sure.
And so we have a state policy task force who's going to be chaired by former state senator Cheryl Gray Evans of Louisiana, who actually lives in the D.C. area now, who's going to be working with us to empower our local affiliates across the country to do this legislative work on the state and local level. I was just recently in Minneapolis, where I met with the president of the Minnesota Black Lawyers Association. We talked about the issues going on there and how they need to have legislation that de-escalation training for police officers and things like that.
Brandon?
No, I was going to say thank you for that. And, we talked in the green room. I'm finishing my law degree right now this year, so I'll be there tonight as a law student member of NBA. Yep, there you go. But, yeah, I just wanted to confirm, and you said again that, sometimes people put in our community politics ahead of the community, and you're saying that either Democrat or Republican, you're looking for people who put the black agenda first.
Yeah, we're looking for people that support our policy agenda, Democrats and Republicans. So, for example, we endorsed and supported Republican Senator Tim Scott's body camera bill when it was ending last year, and we want to do that again this coming session. So we're open to supporting policy positions mm-hmm. and candidates, regardless of party, who support our agenda.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Real quick.
So in terms of gearing up for 2018, how are you, what's the procedure for you selecting your candidates specifically?
What is the?
The procedure for you selecting
your
candidates.
So once we have a launch event tonight, mm-hmm. we will share with all candidates our legislative policy agenda. They'll be asked to respond, do they support or not support that agenda. We'll make determinations based upon that. Obviously, we're looking for those candidates who do support us, but also we want to support our members and black lawyers in particular who are running for public office across the country.
All right, Juan Thomas, we appreciate it. National Bar Association, what's the website?
Thank you, nationalbar.org.
All right, thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
When we come back, we'll talk black home ownership and how we have not had a rebound from this economy. The president of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers up next.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
We have talked extensively on this show about black home ownership. 53% of black wealth was wiped out. Again, 53% of black wealth was wiped out during the home foreclosure crisis that took place from 2007 to present day. Even though there's a rebound happening right now in the country, black folks are not able to keep up. Here are the current numbers. In 2004, the home ownership rates for African Americans was 49.4%, for whites was 72.7%. 2016, home ownership for whites is 71.9%, a drop of 0.8%. For African Americans, it is 42.2%, and is a drop of 7.2%. This has a direct impact on African Americans also being able to get home loans. As you've heard me talk about before, in 2013, $23.09 billion in small business loans were handed out. African Americans got only $385 million of those loans. Why? For African Americans, our collateral is largely our home. No home, no loan, no business. This is the largest gap between black and white home ownership since World War II. Joining us right now to talk about what is being done to reverse the trend is Ron Cooper, president of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, the group of African American real estate brokers. Ron, this is obviously a significant issue because it speaks directly to the ability for African Americans to build wealth.
Very true, Roland. And first of all, I want to thank you on the behalf of the National Association of Real Estate Brokers for this opportunity. Again, you gave us an opportunity earlier this year, but it is dire. It is very important that we as a people understand what happened to us and what do we do going forward. It's a situation where we lost a tremendous amount of equity wealth during the downturn, and we're not being given the opportunity to regain that.
So what should be done? Well, what people listening, they're watching, what do you want them to do?
Well, first of all, NARAB is on a campaign. We have been in 11 cities in the last 24 months talking about the importance of building wealth through home ownership. First of all, it's about education. Second of all, it's about preparation. And thirdly, sustainability. If you read the Harvard report, it stated the same particular mistruth that was said before, and that is, for some reason, everybody believes that during the downturn or during the subprime era, we received a lot of home loans. That is not actually true. What happened was, is that we received a lot of loans, but our home ownership rate did not increase, which means that it was a situation of a loss of wealth or a transfer of wealth. So it's important that we're given the opportunity to get that back.
When you say given the opportunity, okay, how?
Well, first of all, we all have to advocate for the equal access to finance. Finance has always been an issue in terms of FICO scores, in terms of down payment, and that type of thing. We need to understand that in that, we have to do certain things too.
Well, I tell you what, and that's why I would tell people to definitely look up John Hope Bryan, Operation Hope. They have a goal to raise everybody's credit score by 120 points. That's one of the issues there as well. You about 30 seconds, please. You can comment on that and what else you want the viewing audience to do.
We commend John Hope Bryan. We have worked in collaboration with him and the NAACP and the Urban League. But the main thing is education, getting out in the streets and educating our people to the importance that home ownership is still a noble aspiration in America, and it's achievable. You had talked about the home ownership rate. One thing that we can claim in the last two quarters, the last quarter of 16 and the first quarter of 17, home ownership rate has increased 1% for African Americans. No other ethnic group can claim that. We got to keep that push going.
All right.
We got to increase that.
Ron Cooper, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We come back. We'll hear from the third part of our interview with Chef Leah Chase. Next, News 1 on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, so we've had two part-style interview with the great chef Leah Chase, of course, Dookie Chase in New Orleans, and here's the third part of our conversation.
If you give people good food and put nice things down there for them and nice things, a nice tablecloth, I'm a stickler for a tablecloth, a good napkin. I like that because I want my people and I want my customers to feel good about it. You know, when you were a little boy, you might be eating out of a jelly glass or something, but when the company come, your mama said, get out the good stuff. Company come.
That's right.
I say, everybody that hits that front door is my company. Get out the good stuff. And I want them to eat well. And you make them feel good. They relax. They come in to get a good meal.
Who do you like to cook for you?
I like service more than when you could cook me anything. You can fry me a piece of wood, but just serve it to me nice. Because if you serve people nice, they just feel so good to have somebody serving them.
Great customer service. Customer service put you in a foul mood.
Yeah, it's bad. You know, and there's no excuse for that. You can serve people I love to serve people. If I could walk, I would be waiting tables on this floor. I would, because I love to do it. It's just so easy to do it, to say to a person if they order, a person say, well, what I, could I have this? It's my pleasure. It would be my pleasure to do that for you. That's easy, easy.
So what is Leah Chase's favorite breakfast item?
My favorite breakfast item.
That you like to eat, not serve, but that you want to eat.
Or my breakfast item would be, you know, I came up in the country, and you could not believe this, but quail is something I love.
Really?
Because I came
for up. For breakfast?
Yes, for breakfast. Let me tell you. My mother, we lived in the country, and we had strawberry fields. That was our, what we, strawberries, we picked them, and we sold them. And if the my white quails would be in the tree, and they would come down to the strawberry patch and get, you know, you had your gun. You got that? So mother, and in the backyard, I'll never forget, we had these little plum trees. My mother used to make plum jelly. Mm-hmm. She would get up, and she would take those little quails. This was Sunday morning when you had time. Put them in butter, and you always had good butter because the federal government didn't give you no margarine. It gave you good butter. So when WPA gave us good butter, so we braised the quail in that good butter, brush them with a little plum jelly, eat it with some grits, good. And I served that to George W. Bush. He said, I never had that before, Leah, but I like it.
Favorite lunch food?
Oh, meatballs and spaghetti.
Meatballs and spaghetti.
I love meatballs and spaghetti. And you know.
Breaded meatballs or all meat? Meatballs?
All meat meatballs. Okay. Good old meatballs and spaghetti. That's what I truly love. And you know, I had a favorite general. And followed that general. I was a crazy little girl, and I think about it because I followed the war on the radio. Mm-hmm. I'm following George Patton. Mm-hmm. I thought George Patton would just gung. Of course, he wouldn't work today. George would have to be more diplomatic today. Yeah. They would shoot him down. You couldn't do that. But I love George Patton, and I was able to be friendly with his first aide. Mm. Yeah, Colonel Stillman. And Stillman was a history professor at UNO. I got all George Patton's book. Found out George Patton liked meatballs and spaghetti, too.
So you were the George Patton of cooking.
George Patton of cooking. But I got to change rolling because it's not working, you know? I can't go around calling people a stupid jackass no more. I got to do different.
Even though they might be
it
stupid
might be,
jackass.
But you can't call them. You got to say, now, look, darling, this is not the way this is done.
And don't you hate that?
Yes, I do.
Right, because I'm more like General Patton.
Me, yeah, come on, do your work.
And guess what? You want a general leading a war fight.
Leading the war fight. But it don't, you got to change. I got to change. It doesn't work today with these young people. They don't understand.
No, I know.
But if you, and you, they don't understand criticism. There is such a thing as constructive criticism.
Or a critique.
Yes. So if you say, Leah, now don't you do this anymore, I'm gonna say, okay, well, let me change it. And that's what made me. People coming in here saying,
there you go.
You know, no, you don't need to do this anymore because it's not good, Leah. So I listened to them, and I had so much help I didn't know anything.
And it made you better.
Made me better.
Favorite dinner food?
My dinner food it's my dinner have to be long. Gotta always start with a cup of gumbo. Next thing, I want a salad.
Okay.
I want a good salad. And don't give me that little sweetie dressing. I like a lot of blue cheese, a lot of tough things. You know, I like heavy stuff on it. If you give me a good Italian salad, put some anchovies on it. I like that heaviness on my
uh-huh.
And then after that, you can give me some chicken stuff with oyster dressing and sweet potatoes.
Dessert.
That's good. I'm not too big on dessert.
Really?
No,
I am. My mom baked cakes for a living, for part of my grandma's catering business.
I'm not so big on desserts. I'd rather have me a hunk of cheese and crackers and another glass of wine.
So I got to ask you this here, so this is the last one. So you hear this old tale that if something, I can't wait to hear your response, that the greatest compliment to the chef is when somebody belches at the table.
That is horrid. Your mother would rip you for that. Oh my God, Roland, your mother, you know, your mother would slap you down and send you to your room. Oh, you can't do that. No, no.
So what is the greatest compliment?
The greatest compliment is for you to come tell me, it's just like my mama, or it's just like my grandmother, and I feel good.
Well, I would say, it's just like my mama or my daddy.
Yep.
Because luckily, I got both of them who cooked for us growing up.
When they tell me that, I know I hit somewhere good. And they all walks of life. Whites come in black, but if they tell me it's just like my mama, I'm good.
All right, then. Angela, no, no. Yes. Oh, you like that, huh?
We need a gif of her saying, no, no.
Right. Every time Donald Trump lies,
no.
We'll be back. News 1 Now, 60 seconds. Yes, yes.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV
Milo
1.
Jones Smalls turns 29, rapper Lil' Kim turns 43, Kalita Smith, known for her role in Bernie Mac, turns 49, and he sent her a text. Cassie Davis from Tyler Perry's House of Pain, she's so crazy, turns 53. All right, y'all, I gotta go. I'll see y'all tomorrow right here, News 1 Now, TV 1. Alpha's still in the house.
Hi. The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin.